You're listening to KNKX, and we're going to talk about climate change. Now, it's not a whole lot of fun to think about the consequences of the carbon pollution that's warming the atmosphere. But while she was on a science fellowship in upstate New York, Seattle Times writer Linda Mapes spent the better part of 2 years studying how it affected one oak tree. She's written a book about that experience, and 88.5 environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe spoke with her about the book. They met beneath the boughs of a similar oak tree in Seattle's Volunteer Park, one that locals affectionately call the Queen.
So which one is the Queen here?
Well, that would be her right there.
She's leaning. How old is she?
Oh, my heavens. Looking at her, I'm going to say she's at least 80 years, and she might be 100. Just like my tree. My tree is 100 years old, and I needed a tree that was that old because I needed it to narrate the history of our changing world. So she sprouted just about when Model Ts were first coming off the assembly line, as people were leaving the farms and going to the factories, making the emissions that are changing our world. You know, the atmosphere today has more carbon dioxide in it than it has for the last 800,000 years. And that change has happened just since 1750. So you've got this geologic scale change in a blink, and trees can't keep up. Take my tree, the oak tree that I studied. It's actually photosynthesizing differently because there's so much CO2 in the atmosphere. So you have this global force that's actually visible all the way into the cellular structure of individual leaves. I find that amazing.
We're standing here at the base, and I can't help but notice that this queen also has like a mossy carpet at her foot. And that's where these fungi live, right? The mycorrhizal. How do I pronounce it?
It's mycorrhizal, and they actually are in the roots. There's a whole secondary root system, if you will, below ground that lounges all through the soil and into the interstitial spaces of roots.
Are we standing on it now?
We are, because actually the roots of trees extend far beyond their crown. People need to know this so that they know where they need to be careful with their digging or parking. Looking at this tree, its roots actually extend about a third of the distance beyond its drip line. You know, we see them standing there, we think they're alone, trunk to trunk. Boy, underground, it's a whole different story. Everything's going on down there. Parasitism, mutualism, even communication, by the way.
Isn't there talk of intelligence or emotion?
Oh, that's for real. I mean, trees are diplomats, consummate diplomats. Let's say, for instance, you suddenly get a bunch of insects chewing on your leaves, they can actually change the chemistry of their leaves so that they're less palatable. Not only that, they can send out pheromones to call in an airstrike of predatory wasps.
This is a book about climate change also. Tell me more.
So I thought to myself, I was sick of covering climate change in the same way that nobody pays attention to, you know, parts per million, dueling politicians. Who wants to hear another word about that? Not me, not you. So I thought, let's do this differently. Let's actually go take the quiet testimony of living things. Go into nature and see how the living world around us is already changing. We know this if you bird, if you garden, if you hike. You know this intuitively. Our world is already changing. The seasons aren't what they used to be. Spring is earlier, fall is later, winter is squeezed on both ends. And we see this in the canopy of trees. We can see the timing of nature and the emergence of buds, the coloring of leaves and when leaves come off. And I connected with a scientist at Harvard University who was using the tree canopy as a way to understand the footprint of climate change on the landscape.
You are totally geeking out on tree biology. You got to hang out with a bunch of scientists on your fellowship year, right?
It was spectacular. I held what I called tree soirees. I would bring different experts to the tree and watch them encounter it and learn from them, whether they were experts at coring into it and seeing what its long life told us through the rings of the trees. Did it have a year when there was a drought or an insect attack? You can actually see that in a tree core, in a very tight band where it didn't grow much. Something happened that year, and you can look into the history, newspaper clippings, farmers' journals, tree stand records, and find out, oh, that was the year of the gypsy attack or the ice storm, what have you.
What about diversity and the whole issue of, you know, there's a way in which you sound a little elitist. Here you are running off to Harvard and, you know, you grew up in privilege up there in upstate New York. Why should we be paying attention to these issues now when some people are, you know, still worried about the water on the Duwamish?
If you're worried about healthy water on the Duwamish, the very first thing you should do is plant trees. In an uncertain, burdened world, trees are repositories of only good verbs. They sustain, they connect, they cleanse, they moderate. I got a letter from a man living in the Rainier Valley not long ago saying that he was dismayed that we are forgetting about the needs for pedestrian access in South Seattle, and there are no trees. There are some here and there, but if you look at the tree canopy from a bird's eye view in Seattle, I did a story about this a couple years ago, there is a grave economic and environmental injustice in our city. Where do you see the big trees? Where are we standing? Volunteer Park, Capitol Hill, gigantic trees, beautiful canopy, birds everywhere. Okay, let's go down to, say, South Seattle. Let's go walk around down there. What do you see? You don't see trees. And so it's hotter, it's dirtier, you don't have the wildlife, you don't have the shade, you don't have the beauty, you don't have the peace, you don't have that near at hand nature. You know, some people can take the time and spend the money to go off to the Issaquah Alps on a weekend or further into our fantastic national parks. That's great. But for people who are, you know, kind of stuck here in the city taking care of day-to-day life, what matters most is this close-at-hand nature. And that's where we need trees, not just here where the rich people live, everywhere in this city. And so far from being elitist, a wish for trees, a wish for urban forests, a wish for a robust, beautiful canopy that shades and comforts us. Everybody needs that.
So there's a very popular book that was a big bestseller, The Hidden Life of Trees by, is it Peter Vorleben?
Yes, from Germany. And this was kind of a secret shocker of a bestseller. People went crazy over this book. And I know why. It's because, you know, trees are so familiar and beloved to us. They're our oldest traveling companions on this earth. Everyone has a favorite that will outlive them. This is the thing about trees. You know, they were here long before us. They enable life on Earth. And they're not just standing there. They make life on Earth possible, creating the oxygen that we breathe. You know, trees are just remarkable entities. To know even one tree well is to be dazzled.
Linda Mapes, Seattle Times writer and author of Witness Tree. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Bellamy.